The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be back with you this time from our Edmond campus, our beautiful headquarters campus here in the middle of June. We'll be back here for a few weeks through the hot period of the summer, so that'll be exciting to get some sun and some fun in the sun as well. We brought Parker back with us. He's here in the studio in Edmond, so two-thirds of our Edstone crew here with you today in Edmond. Of course, the other third, and I shouldn't say a third, actually, because Richard Palmer, he's just not in the studio with us at Edstone, but he puts in a lot of work to prepare the content for these programs, as does Sam Livingston. So others do as well. Brent Noctegal feeds me with information. Brad McDonald, I get quite a bit from people on this end as well. So it's much appreciated, and that's why we have a program for you that's so informative. And there is so much going on in the news. It just, you take a day off while you're traveling across the Atlantic and then come back to it last night and this morning. And still, again, you're just kind of shaking your head in amazement at what is happening to our nations. And by that, I mean Britain and the United States in particular. And I'll come to that here in just a second. First, an email from one of the listeners. It says, thank you all for your hard work and for trumpeting God's truth in this cacophonous world replete with lies, deceitful narratives, manipulative half-truths, and utter bunkum. I'll leave it to you to look up bunkum in the dictionary, an interesting word. It says, these trumpet dailies have ensured that God's people are kept abreast of the enemy's wrongdoings and have kept the hope of God's kingdom on the horizon. It says, this world looks to false hopes that can only end in ruin. Your last couple of programs have been most revealing. And as we view our cities aflame, I can't help but to contemplate how much Manasseh is throwing away. We're just throwing it all away. All of these blessings, the richest, most prosperous, most peaceful, most free nation in history. Well, we certainly had our conflicts here and there, great struggles, but when you think about the peace, the relative peace that we've had on our homeland for two centuries, and here we're just throwing it away. It says, many immigrants, we made this point the other day, he says, many immigrants want to come here because of our many freedoms, and yet our people fail to appreciate those freedoms themselves. It says, my wife works with a Cambodian woman who fled her native soil because of the communist peril that existed at the time. She has never returned. She saw the rioting in our cities and nailed it when she essentially said that they're only in there for the free loot. She knows what real communism is like, and yet that's what all these rioters and leftists want. They want communism. It's what they want. You may have seen video footage. I need to play it, I suppose, at some point. This black African woman, I don't know how many years she's been in the United States. She even wrote an op-ed, I believe, for the Wall Street Journal. But she's been one that's actually gone out and confronted the protesters and said, where were you, Black Lives Matter? Where were you when all of these people are being shot up in Chicago? I didn't see you throwing any protests there. Of course, that's the black-on-black crime that happens every day. It goes on every day, and this woman's out there saying, you guys are hypocrites. And the amazing thing about this woman, or at least the footage that we've seen of her, is that the mob really doesn't have any response. She's just coming at them with some basic truths, some basic facts. And all that they can do is try to ignore her or say, hey, why don't you go away? Because, see, she's black now. She's black, and she's saying, look, the black-on-black crime is much worse. And furthermore, I came here from Africa, and this is, I have freedom here. I have opportunity here. It's quite a different perspective. We have some students that come from African nations, quite a few over the years, and they bring a fresh perspective to this struggle, this division, this strife that you see in the United States, the internal sickness, the disease. This listener says, please be brave. The enemy is strong and goes about as a roaring lion, but we have the Lion of the Tribe of Judah on our side. Indeed we do, but you look at the times in which we're living, and this world needs God's truth like never before, all across our nations, Great Britain, the United States. We're just seeing it. It's gone on now for weeks, and we almost sound like a broken record in some respects. But here we've just been surrendering to the mob, surrendering one city after another, one statue after another, one protest after another. We have an article, by the way, coming out in the next Trumpet magazine. We just finished it yesterday, going by that title, Surrendering to the Mob. You just have to surrender. In fact, you can't even criticize. You criticize Black Lives Matter. Nigel Farage did it, demoted. Others have done it. There was a case yesterday. Sam emailed me about this soccer player that he criticized coronavirus and said it was just ridiculous to shut everything down. He got suspended for a game. You can't criticize the virus. You can't criticize Black Lives Matter. If you do it, you are to be silenced. You are to be blotted out. That's where we are at the moment. Look at what's happening to the city of Seattle, one of the most beautiful cities in the United States. It used to be. It's been controlled by radical leftists for decades. And now you have these thugs taking over a 6-block square, calling it this Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. CHAZ is the acronym. They've just taken it over. They've run off the police. The police were there resisting and resisting and resisting until they thought, well, this is getting a little too tense, a little too dangerous, and so we better pick up and leave like the Minneapolis Police Department did. And so they did. And here come these terrorist thugs, and they just take it over. In some respects, you almost want them, okay, carry out your designs here. As an American, it's painful to watch. It's hard to see your country die. But at the same time, they've been going on and on with this communist propaganda for so long. Part of you wants to just say, okay, take your city, turn it into your utopia. Let's see how it turns out. These hoodlums walking the streets with AK-47s, just taking over the streets. Taking over that Capitol Hill district in Seattle, putting up walls and barricades, signs that say, you come into this area, you're leaving the United States of America. Think of it. This is not South Sudan. This is not Mogadishu we're talking about. This is Seattle. The Puget Sound, the beautiful harbor up there. I can remember trips to Seattle when I was a kid, one with my father. He took me to the Kingdom to see some baseball games with the Mariners. What an exciting trip it was. A five-hour ride in the car, some baseball games. Back then, back in the 1980s, it was just a beautiful city. It felt safe. Now it's just overrun with homeless people or these thugs now that are out on the street saying, get out of our city. This is our city. This is our police department. And the police just step aside. Well, we'll see how it turns out. You've got these different factions. the people police showing up. You've got the thugs with the AK-47s, and then just the mob in general that shows up to deal with crimes. Homeless people are already stealing food. And then you've got residents in there. And the craziness, they're wanting to charge businesses in this six-block district. They're wanting to, I guess, levy taxes to provide for their government. And the residents who live there, what must they be thinking? One of them sent out a tweet asking for the world. I guess we're another nation now. You've got Chaz and then the United States. It says, we need more food to keep the area operational. Please, if possible, bring vegan meat substitutes, fruits, oats, soy products, etc. All of these lefties trapped in this utopia, and they want their soy burgers. I'm surprised he didn't request marijuana. It's just crazy. And what are they receiving from the mayor's office, the leadership? Well, really, they're receiving encouragement. They're receiving support. The city is there. They're putting porta-potties all over the place. They haven't cut off the water or the electricity. Everything continues as they just move in there, these thugs, and take over buildings. Listen to the Seattle police chief. I think this was from yesterday. She's in this video, she's addressing her officers. And at one point in the video, she says, now, I know this might be leaked, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is clip one.
We are all going through one of the toughest times ever in the history of the Seattle Police Department. I know how incredibly difficult these past 2 weeks have been for you and for your families.
In the history of the Seattle Police Department, that's coming from this police chief. If you're not watching the video, she's a black woman. So you've got the radical left mayor, a white woman, and then you've got this police chief, and she's acknowledging there on the front lines, this has been one of the toughest times we've ever gone through. She went on to say this, clip two.
The decision to board up the precinct, our home, the first precinct I worked in, was something I have been holding off. You should know, leaving the precinct was not my decision. You fought for days to protect it. I asked you to stand on that line, day in and day out, to be pelted with projectiles, to be screamed at, threatened, and in some cases hurt. Then to have a change of course nearly 2 weeks in, it seems like an insult to you and our community. Ultimately, the city had other plans for the building and relented to severe public pressure.
The city, the mayor, they had another plan. The mayor's plan was to evacuate, just like Mayor Fry in Minneapolis. It's getting a little dangerous. I mean, it's one thing for buildings to go up in flames, but we can't have one life threatened. Not in the police department and not the thugs either. They can just roam the streets, do whatever they want. If it comes down to a dangerous situation that might threaten a life, well, then we'll just evacuate. And what do the mobs do with this? How do the mobs react to this? You know how they react. They are emboldened because no one stands up to them. They're all surrendering. It's happening every day. It's not stopping. That's the thing. That's why this is spreading from city to city. And it's the same in the UK. They just don't have as many guns. But it's the same mentality, the same mindset. Just give the mob what they want. Don't confront. One final clip from the police chief, clip three.
We had solid information to believe that anti-government groups would destroy the precinct once we left, whether through vandalism or arson. As you might have heard, the Seattle Fire Department was nearby to protect the precinct and the entire residential block from a real risk of a large-scale fire. This week, there have been demonstrations, and what I understand were threats against a news reporter on Capitol Hill. There was vandalism to our city streets and our building, but today, the precinct remained standing. No officers were hurt, no force was used. We have heard that there are armed people patrolling the streets near 12th and Pine. Of course, this is very concerning, especially because we don't know who these people are. We've also received report that these armed people may be demanding payment from business owners in exchange for some of that protection. We've also heard that they may be demanding to see identification from people who live in the area. This is not legal.
To say the least, this is not legal. What you're doing here in this six-block area, this is not legal. Charging taxes on businesses, or rather saying, you pay us this money or else you're not going to be safe. Leaving the United States of America, all of these threats, the vandalism, the armed patrols, the armed thugs on patrol. And the mayor, I guess she thinks this is just fine. This is what she said last night on CNN, clip four.
We've got four blocks in Seattle that you just saw pictures of that is more like a block party atmosphere. It's not an armed takeover. It's not a military junta. We will make sure that we can restore this, but we have block parties and the like in this part of Seattle all the time. It's known for that. So I think the president, number one, there is no threat right now to the public. And we're taking that very seriously. We're meeting with businesses and residents. But what the president threatened is illegal and unconstitutional. And the fact that he can think he can just tweet that and not have ramifications is just wrong.
I don't even know what to say. It's a block party, she says. There's no threat to the public. And the real villain is Donald Trump for saying, hey, if you don't get the city under control, I'll have to do it. These people denounce and criticize the president of the United States more than they do Antifa when they're out there wielding these AK-47s. Who's really pro-American here? Who's really concerned about the nation, its security, its citizens, its property? She says it's just a block party, just some kids out on the streets, playing some music, having some fun. Nothing to worry about here. This is what she tweeted in response to the president's tweet. It's clear Donald Trump doesn't understand what's happening on five square blocks of our city. Cal Anderson and Capitol Hill has for decades been a place for free speech, community, and self-expression. That's all we're seeing here, just a little bit of self-expression. Leaving the United States of America. The police precinct, and it's pretty close, but I think they've got the east one. The west one is where the 9/11 hub is. That's where all the calls come in, the call center. If they push a little bit further and get the other police precinct, you've basically got what they've been protesting for the last 2 weeks. No police. Nobody to answer calls from citizens. This is the Seattle Police Union president last night talking about just the appalling leadership in the city. Clip five.
It's a sad result of the city of Seattle's elected officials lacking the political willpower to enforce the rule of law. And it's the closest I've seen to our country to becoming a lawless state.
Country becoming a lawless state. That's what he reports to the mayor. So it'll be interesting to see what happened. Given what the police chief said, given what this police union president said, and then the mayor out on TV saying it's a block party. She's the leader. She presides over the police. And the only one that she can find fault with is President Trump. Shame on her. It's her city. Shame on her. What would the rest of the United States look like if we had that kind of mentality or thinking? You look at what's happening to Seattle, to Portland, to San Francisco, to Los Angeles, to New York City, to Minneapolis, to Detroit, and on and on and on it goes. How much longer are the residents there going to even stay there? If they know they're not safe, if they know they can't be protected, if they know that on any given night, their business can go up in flames. We're about to see a mass exodus from the cities of the United States. This is the United States of America. That last clip, by the way, was on Tucker Carlson. And through the past couple, 3 weeks, he has had probably the best coverage, well, easily, from what I've seen, the best coverage of all of this mob activity, the mob rule, and government leaders not doing anything to stop it. I was a little concerned last night when I saw this clip before going to bed. This was Tucker opening his show, talking about how that maybe he's come on a little bit too strong. This is what Tucker Carlson said last evening, clip 6.
Almost all of it, as you know, all the news, is horrifying. Vandals are defacing our country. They're destroying our cities, our institutions, our civil society. They have no right to do any of that. They don't own this country. They did not build it. The rest of us should not allow them to wreck it, but we are allowing them. And it's infuriating to watch. We've definitely been infuriated, genuinely. If you've watched this show, you probably noticed that. And tonight we want to apologize for that. Here's why. The last thing America needs right now is more anger. Yet another red-faced screamer shouting about this or that. And to the extent that's been us, we're sorry. We genuinely want to help fix this disaster. So adding to the sum total of rage does not help.
That's Tucker last night apologizing, I guess, for being too red-faced, for being infuriated. But there is such a thing as righteous indignation. And the thing of it is, when you see 99.9% of the commentators and the politicians wanting to appease the mob, somebody's got to stand up to them. I'm all for it. He went on to say that, you know, he's going to continue to be honest, but that he wants to be calm and he wants to keep a sense of humor. And then the rest of the segment, he's talking about Chaz, and there's quite a few humorous moments in there as he makes these crazy comparisons. And we're certainly happy to entertain with a little humor from time to time. But what, we've never seen this happen to the United States. We've never seen this happen to our cities. City officials, the city government just basically handing over sections of the city to an armed mob. I think his take the last couple of weeks has been spot on. Hopefully he doesn't dial it back too much, because truthfully, we need his coverage at this point. You look, though, at the trend here in the United States, in the UK, and you can see how God's church is going to be a lone voice crying out. This world desperately needs the government of God. It needs the rule of Jesus Christ. What is Jesus Christ going to do when he returns? And all of these armies mobilized to fight against him. Is he going to just step aside and say, well, here you go, you can have the Mount of Olives. I'll give you Jerusalem. I can easily go and set up somewhere else. No problem. We've got another precinct somewhere else. You can have it, Antifa. You can have it, Black Lives Matter. That's hardly the way Christ is going to approach setting up and establishing God's kingdom on earth. He's gonna bring some force. It's the only language this thuggish mentality understands. The only language. And so to see the United States and Britain, these two nations, just like that listener said at the start, here we've had all of these blessings, and we're just throwing them all away. They're bracing for more violent protests in London this weekend. You know how they're getting it ready? All of these statues, like Churchill, defaced last weekend? Well, they've covered Churchill in a box. They've locked Churchill. Churchill's in quarantine. Churchill's in house arrest. This is how they're keeping the social distance between Churchill and the thugs. They've got to box him. They've boarded him up, just like so many of the stores on Fifth Avenue in New York City. This is becoming quite a common sight in the United States. These are not the slums of Los Angeles that have gone up in flames like in 1992. These are the commercial districts like Fifth Avenue in New York. Like the shopping district in downtown Boston. All of these windows, all of these doors, just boarded up like you're in some third world country. So that's what they're doing in the UK. We got to protect Churchill. How do you do it? Put police there to guard it and to stand firm? Can't do that because that could put someone's life in danger. So let's just board him up. Let's put him in a cage. And hopefully the mob won't get to him. This thinking is spreading and fast. And Black Lives Matter and Antifa, they are gaining power and momentum by the minute because no one will stand up to them. And those that do, even if they do it in front of a microphone, oftentimes they're just silenced. You can't even hear their voices. Nigel Farage was perhaps the strongest voice against it. The strongest critic against what Black Lives Movement was doing. You look at the tweet from Sadiq Khan. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Just outrageous. He's advising people to stay home because of the potential for violence. To anyone planning to join Black Lives Matter protests over the coming days, for you and your family's safety, please stay home and find a safe way to make your voice heard. To the extreme far-right groups hijacking this crucial cause, Londoners have no time for your hatred. So it's the far-right that's hijacked these demonstrations, don't you know? That's always the take from the far-left leadership. You see it with the mayor of Seattle, and here's the mayor of London. Listen to his statement from yesterday. I stand with the millions of people around the world who are saying loud and clear that Black Lives Matter. Londoners from all ages, races, and backgrounds have been coming together to protest racial injustice and structural racism. It's clear that the majority of the protesters have been peaceful. Mostly peaceful. It's like a broken record. Even as we see cities go up in flames, even as we see parts of cities taken over by these Marxist communists. He says later on, however, I'm extremely concerned that further protests in central London not only risk spreading COVID-19, but could lead to disorder, vandalism, and violence. Extreme far-right groups who advocate hatred and division are planning counter-protests. They're advocating hatred and division. But Black Lives Matter, Antifa, those groups, it's amazing. They've just come together. It's brought us all together. And it's been overwhelmingly peaceful. Overwhelmingly peaceful. It's kind of like a block party. There's other statues. There's a statue, I didn't even know there was one, of George Washington, Trafalgar Square, but they've boxed that one up as well. Cenotaph, that's the nation's main memorial for its war dead. I'm speaking of the UK here. It's too big to completely block off, but the lower part of it's been fully enclosed. That's like the UK's version of Arlington Cemetery. They're having to board these things up just to keep them from being destroyed. They're certainly not going to put the army out there. They're certainly not going to put the police. The police are evacuating. The police are running. They're going in the other direction. And in response to this, you're seeing little bits of it. Well, Sadiq Khan, I'm sure there are groups on the right that are responding in the U.S. and the U.K. Some of them, communities, there's a case in the U.K. where the community came out and just surrounded this statue and said, no, you're not taking it down. Now, they don't have as many guns over there like we do in the United States. How quickly could this explode in violence all over the place? I think some righteous indignation coming from Tucker Carlson or whoever is exactly what this country needs. Not that it's going to help solve the problems. It's going to explode. And people need to know what's coming. And we need to repent of our sins and turn to God in humility, in prayer, and in fasting, and ask God to help us and ask God to protect us. All of these statues boarded up. The mayor said the statue of Winston Churchill in Parliament Square is being temporarily covered for its protection. And then you have the others. We've gone through the example in Bristol. There's a little more detail on that in today's news stack. This Bristol police chief that explained why they basically just let the mob tear down that statue, that Colston statue, and dump it into the harbor. Listen to what this police chief, or the chief constable, his name is Andy Marsh, and he's explaining why the police last week just stepped aside and let the mob carry out that action. Clip 12.
Midway through the protest, we saw CCTV images in our control room of people, protesters, on top of the Colston statue. Within 2 minutes, that statue had been pulled down. We had deployed officers to respond to take appropriate action. But the commanders on the ground made the decision that to intervene to arrest suspects would likely to lead to injuries to suspects, injuries to officers, people who were not involved in damaging property being drawn into a very violent confrontation with the police that could have had serious ramifications for the city of Bristol and beyond. Can you imagine scenes of police in Bristol fighting with protesters who were damaging the image, the statue, of a man who is reputed to have gathered much of his fortune through the slave trade?
He says, can you imagine the police confronting that mob and what could have happened? Well, I would ask him, can you imagine what might happen if the police evacuate? Because we're seeing it in the United States. And in some ways, we're seeing it in the UK too. He said, if you notice, he said, the arrests, if we made them, might have led to injury. So don't arrest. Don't arrest them. Don't apprehend them. Don't bring charges. I mean, that could cause some trouble. That could cause problems. That's the thinking of the police now. It's just this statue of a guy that made some money because he had some investments in slave trade. Guy's Hospital, I don't know the city that this is in the UK, but they're getting rid of the statues of its founder, Sir Thomas Guy. They're named after this Englishman. Sir Guy made his money printing and importing Bibles. That's how he made his money. He was trying to spread the word of God. He gave a lot of his money to charity, including through founding this hospital, Guy's Hospital. But get this. He owns shares in the South Sea Company, and that, among other things, sold slaves. So he just had some shares in this company that was trafficking in slaves, among other things. This did go on in the world. It's gone on all over the world, if you go back into our history. But it's just the United States and Britain. It's just these two nations that are imploding with this kind of insanity, this kind of nonsense. So he's got to come down as well. Well, he had some shares there. Got to get him out of here. We got to erase it. And so no wonder there's people that are showing up saying, look, if the police aren't going to take care of our property, then we will. We'll take care of it. In Great Again, this is my father's booklet, he said, the effect of responding to lawlessness by handcuffing law enforcement is going to tear our society apart. How true is that statement from Great Again? 3-4 years ago, you handcuff the police and it tears society apart. Look at Seattle. He says, it is certain to add fuel to the fire that is burning parts of cities like Baltimore. Yet it's, he's writing this, obviously, when Baltimore was in the news. Yet it's happening across the country. So-called leaders saying that law enforcement policies and procedures disproportionately affect racial minorities and that the answer is to back down. So over and again, you're seeing it from mayors, from police chiefs, from this constable in Bristol. We've got to back down. We've got to be pro-Black Lives Matter. We can't criticize that movement. This is going to heal our nations. This is what will bring us together. And then look at what's happening. Look at our cities. He says, finally, this is in great again. What happens when fearful police pull back? Criminals run amok. That is the effect when you undermine police authority, when you inflame bitterness, when you equate thuggery with a noble quest for justice. That's spot on. That's from great again. Equating thuggery with some kind of a noble quest for justice. Why, these thugs in Seattle, they're just seeking justice. The ones vandalizing the Churchill statue, they're just seeking justice. Justice for George. Is this how we get to a just society? Far from it. And you can look at that warning in great again and see that what my father said there a few years ago, it's spread, and it's spread rapidly. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude with our Bible study segment. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
This black African woman that confronted the protesters, I mentioned her in the first segment, Nestridge Yumga. She's a Washington, D.C. resident. She had the, I can't get to the rest of the op-ed because it's blocked here, but she wrote the op-ed on June 8th, so a couple days ago, and said, if the only black lives that matter to the Black Lives Matter movement are those taken by rogue police officers, then let it be clear, not all black lives matter to them. That's the only time they show up. In these rare cases, and they are rare, when a police officer shoots or kills an unarmed black man. Meanwhile, look at what's happening in the black community. Look at what has happened to the black family. Look at the scourge of fatherlessness in all across our society, but especially so in the black community. It's just horrible what it's doing to those communities that have in some cases gone up in flames in recent weeks. This is an interview from the actor Denzel Washington. The thing about this clip that you'll hear is it's from 3 years ago. You wonder what he would say today. In fact, in this interview from 3 years ago, he's being interviewed by a black commentator, and then he's, of course, a black actor, and they both agree that the system is rigged, you know, rigged against blacks, rigged in favor of whites. But in this particular clip, he talks about the problem of fatherlessness within the black community, and it's spot on. This is clip 12.
Incarceration rates in America has been a problem, especially as opposed to minorities. And Roman delves into this, the issues around the legal system. Do you think we've made any headway in the legal
system? I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up seven-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was in Chicago a couple of four weeks ago, and we saw these little kids on bikes with masks on the side of their head, like five or six of them. And the driver said, yeah, they're little yummies. I said, who? He said, little yummies. Look up. Google Little Yummy. Mm. Little Yummy was an 11-year-old murderer.
Wow.
And you look at his picture, you'll see the headshot of him, and he's like this. And he got murdered at 11 by a 14-year-old.
Wow.
Who's doing life now, and a 16-year-old.
That makes no sense.
You blame the system? Where was his father? Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
You know, I did talk about my three closest friends, and they did, you know, 15 to 25. One did 28, this and that. I was the only one of the three that had a father in my life, even though my parents were together. But I still had a father who was a gentle man and a good example, yeah. And they didn't. We can blame the system if we want, but they didn't lock any of us up at seven.
Yeah.
We were all doing enough to get locked up at 13. My parents sent me in another direction. They didn't have anybody to help them, and they kept doing what they was doing.
The actor Denzel Washington from 2017. They didn't get locked up, some of these criminals, when they were 7 years old. They weren't targeted, in other words. They started getting into some bad behavior. They didn't have fathers. And then they ended up his friends, two of them. Yeah, they ended up going to prison. He didn't, though. And he says the difference, his father was involved in his life. His father was there. That, if you leave aside all of the latest controversy on the police, law enforcement, even before a young black man has interactions with local law enforcement, before that, the first line of defense is the father. The father's role. You look into the Bible and you see that Jesus came to declare the father. He came to promote the father. The father was very much involved in Jesus Christ's life. They had an intimate relationship. They were with each other, as it says in the opening verses of John 1. Look at the ministry of Jesus Christ and how often he returned to his Father, who was the very center of the gospel message that Jesus proclaimed in the God Family Vision. My father says, that was Christ's message for mankind. It was about the Father. Our Father is the head of that wonderful, majestic God family. Our number one passion must be to declare him and his family. Just a beautiful statement from that booklet. Our number one passion, to declare the Father, to declare the God family, to declare the Father's role. He said we need to move more into the bosom of the Father. That's where Christ was. God wants us to get deeply entrenched in his family. Jesus Christ led the way in declaring the Father. Now we're commanded to follow his example. This is the foundational truth of the Bible. You see, when you get this right, then you can turn the weapons of war into farming instruments. You can turn those military armaments into tools that help society. If the government's right in the home, if the father's role is being declared, if we revolve around the father, that's what leads to a peaceful and loving society. That's what leads to utopia. This is the answer. This is tomorrow's world. This is a vision of tomorrow's world, the God family vision. The father who heads the family and Jesus Christ the Son, and he's to marry the bride. That is the church today, and all of those saints that have lived and died in faith. In 1 Timothy 3, verse 3, it says, this is talking about the scriptural qualifications for a minister. It says, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy or of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. If you rule your house well, then you are leading. If you can lead at home, then you can lead more people. You can maybe lead the congregation. You can maybe lead the community. That's the way it should be now. You look at some of these mayors. You look at some of these local city officials, and so many of them, they come from dysfunctional families. And here they're presiding over a whole city. And it gets a little bit tense. It gets a little bit dangerous. And what have we seen? Just weakness. We've seen pathetic weakness on display. Law enforcement in retreat, full-scale retreat, evacuation. Here's where righteous authority begins. It begins in the home. This is the big goal. This is the goal of a Christian father, to make sure that he rules the family well and that he brings the children into subjection. If you don't do that, then it leads to chaos. It leads to rebellion. It can lead to violence. It leads to disobedience. Verse 5, it says, this is 1 Timothy 3, it says, for if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? How are you going to be able to lead in a church congregation if you can't rule your own house well? If you can't establish some authority? Sometimes that means righteous indignation. Obviously, even that's administered in love. If you correct your child, there's some anguish, there's some tears, there's some agony sometimes. But Paul in Hebrews 12 said, what comes after that? It's peaceable fruit. That's what we're aiming for. It comes from God's family government. That peace, that security, that respect for authority. Where is the respect? Like that police officer in New York City said, I played the clip for you on Wednesday. Where is the respect for law enforcement? We're supposed to respect these social justice warriors and disrespect law enforcement. That's the message our young people are getting. That's the message that the rioters and the mob, that's the message they're seeing by these evacuations, by boarding up all these statues. Goes back to the family. This goes back a couple generations. How many parents, going back to the revolutionary years of the 1960s and 70s, how many parents came away from that thinking that, well, I guess the new approach is to just remove as many restraints as possible, to just let the children go, to just let the tantrum sort of run its course? Well, that's what we're seeing now on the streets of Seattle and Minneapolis and New York City and Boston. We're seeing children without restraint. They never learned it. They never learned it at home. They never learned it from a father. You remove restraint, and it leads to dangerous, chaotic scenes. We need that restraint. We need it. You have it in certain parts of a society. You get into a car and you put on your seatbelt. There's restraint there. It does keep you from, you know, moving in certain ways. It's meant to protect. That's the way it is with God's laws. Listen to 1 Kings chapter 1 and verses 5 and 6. This is an example from David's life, King David. It says, "Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.'" That's what this thug declared in Seattle. "I'm king. I'm king of this six-block area. I will be king." And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not, it says, "and his father had not displeased him at any time, saying, 'Why have you done so?'" So here comes this son, this talented young individual, this son of David, leading this insurrection. And what does your Bible say? What's the root cause here? The New King James Version says, "And his father," that's David, "had not rebuked him at any time by saying, 'Why have you done so?'" His father didn't confront him. His father didn't rebuke him. The Moffat translation says, "His father had never checked him all his life by asking what he meant by his conduct." You see, David, he didn't, at least not with Adonijah, he didn't say no. He didn't challenge his son. He didn't challenge him and say, "Listen to me. What are you doing? You've got some explaining to do." God is drawing attention to this because he wants for us to understand how that the family government, it's crucial to a stable, peaceful society. It's the foundation. It's the foundation of a law-abiding society. What goes on in the family? David ran into trouble with his children, some of them, because he didn't raise them up in the way that they should go. And the fruit, sometimes you don't see the bad fruits that come from it until a few years down the road, a few years later. In a societal sense, what you're seeing happen in these last few weeks, that the seeds were set for this. They were planted generations ago. It started with parents saying, "Oh, I guess administering discipline is no longer the thing. Now it's remove restraint. Well, let's see how that works." Then you add to that, remove the restraint, these really lenient policies with child rearing, and then the epidemic of divorce and fathers that go missing. A lot of times, just having the father in the general vicinity, even if he's not administering family government the way that he should, is an incredible protective layer for society. What I'm getting at is it's just like the perfect storm. Lenient parents, remove restraint, fathers that go missing, and then look at our cities and look at our society. Here's how Mr. Armstrong summed it up. "Nothing in this material world is as important as a happy home life with father, mother, and well-taught happy children, a close-knit family." He says, why? Because it strikes at the very heart and core of humanity's future and eternity and the gospel that Jesus Christ proclaimed. This is the heart and core of the kingdom of God message that Jesus proclaimed. Jesus came, keep in mind, to declare the Father, to declare the family. And Mr. Armstrong says, nothing is as important as a happy home life with father, mother, and well-taught, happy children. God's kingdom starts with you and your family. That's the way we want to approach our responsibilities in the home. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.